The horns,
don't. Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a simplistic play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the guys play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We thought we'd be partying like it was 2012, but kind of feels like a repeat of Sugar Bowl performance against Utah. We're struggling like 2008.
Man, that game was, obviously the game started different and, we got off to a fast start. And so there's definite differences between the Utah game, but sitting there through that painful second half and us not being able to stop their pass rush, there was definite glimpses and thinking back to, man, this is just 08 all over again.
Yeah, and this is definitely a public service that we're doing here. We've had a couple of folks reach out to us and ask where the post game show is, and I think you summarized it pretty well. We're coming out here and we're doing what Saban would want us to do, which is finish strong, finish what we started. So here's where we are, and hopefully we'll have a little more spirit than the team at times appeared to have.
Yeah, and like you and I talked about before the show, I mean, this is uncharted territory for us. I mean, for the listeners, we're finishing up our fourth year, and this team, we've never done a podcast with back-to-back losses.
Yeah, do we know how to do this?
We do not. And so for the listeners, get prepared for a little bit of a gripe session, because some of that's going to get worked in pretty easily. But, like you said before the show, let's try to highlight some positives, because there were positives. But, you and I call it like we see it. And so we got to call out some of the negatives as well.
Well, let's get to calling it out. Let's start with the offense. What stood out to you?
The first thing I want to start with is Leon Brown, yep. Because that is really what jumped out to me. And I went back and looked online at RollTide.com leading up to the game. And their photo guys showed a picture of the practice, the second or third practice in the stadium with Kellen Williams lined up at right guard. And with the holidays and everything else, I didn't stay on every story leading up to the game, and you and I didn't get to talk a lot beforehand, but I had no expectation that Leon Brown would be the guy getting the nod at right guard.
Yeah, I think a day or two, maybe 2 days before the game, it did come out that it looked like that was going to happen.
What I had do you maybe think about little, that, though?
Well, I had, I was going to say I had maybe a little lead time on you, but my level of surprise was there as well. Obviously we knew Steen was going to be out. I thought that we would have, between Kellen Williams, he's the kind of the guy that I thought we'd have. If we were creative with the position, then I thought we might try to do something with Lindsey and Kelly, obviously one of them playing center. And then if we really wanted to do something different, then maybe Grant Hill playing tackle and sliding down Shepherd, and then maybe the fourth level, if we were going to bring someone kind of off the radar, if you will, I thought it would be Alphonse Taylor. So we get to the fifth option of what I might think that we would do with that position. We get to at least the fifth option before I think that we're going to bring Leon Brown in. And, I'll be the first to admit I was very disappointed with his performance last A-Day. And I have been at times very disappointed with his performance in a backup role during the season. And I went and I watched the game with an expectation of seeing him fail or seeing him perform badly. And having watched the game and then literally having gone back and watched every offensive snap in slow motion multiple times again, I have to change my tune. I was pretty impressed with his performance. I don't know where you want to go and what you saw, but as a whole, he didn't do what Steen would have done, but I thought he was pretty good. He may have been our second best lineman on the field in the contest.
Well, here's what I will say is that we talked in the preseason and everything was built up that Kellen Williams was the sixth man, right? Yep. And his versatility as that guy. And so when 2 days...
And he operated in that capacity during the season.
Yes. And so if the team has six... If on practice three of the six practices you're doing on site in New Orleans, Kellen Williams is lining up as the guy, and we think there's every reason to think he should be the guy because he's the fifth year senior with the most experience. I want to know what suddenly happened within a couple of days before the game that changed all this. Because
I don't know. And there was a point in the game when Leon blew a shoe and we brought Williams in, and we had ample time to run the ball. There was still 10 or 11 seconds on the clock, on the play clock. So we were not, you know, seconds running out. We had ample time to line up and run the ball with Williams. And we intentionally, now, you know, it was kind of a key point on a key drive, but we intentionally called the timeout to allow Leon to, you know, get his shoe, you know, put back together and back in the game. And, you know, I'm sure we coached him up a little bit, kind of coached up the team and, you know, reiterated what we were going to do. But we've seen before where someone blows a shoe back up, you know, we've given many game balls for this. Run a backup in there and don't miss a beat. Don't have to burn a timeout. You know, Saban treasures those. Sometimes
exactly.
I think he over.
Exactly.
You know, he treasures them overly sometimes, you know, like he's gonna cash them in at the end of the game or something. But to use one in that situation, all it really does is amplify your question. What happened? You know, you were thinking more in macro, and in that situation is more of a micro situation where literally he was going to participate in a play, and we virtually said no.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because for the listeners, this is why they tune into this show, right? Is to pick up those little kind of things. And so when that happened, I said, you know, we've got to talk about that in the podcast.
Yep.
Because that was so intentional. It was something like it was going to be a second and two or a third and one or something, you know, critical, right? Short down and distance. I want to say the next play was going to be a third and one, it seems like, you know, third and short yards. And so, you know, and when they called the timeout, okay, and the team's coming off to huddle, somebody runs up to Kellen Williams and like pats him on the helmet, like, great job being alert and jumping out there like you and I've always talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And so he obviously wasn't hurt because he got out there pretty fast, which makes me want to infer that the guy wants to be out there, right? He saw this as his opportunity. And so what does that say about the state of affairs there? Because this is a guy that comes in. We think he's going to challenge for starting left tackle. JUCO guy like Saban has been able to pick him in the past. He can't even beat out Austin Shepherd at right tackle. And so then he even starts out on the third string line and works his way to the second string line. And so that's what I had going into this game. Now, going back to your point about you watching all the plays, I will say on run plays, okay, especially those first two or three plays, I thought he did pretty good. But on pass plays, he struggled. And some of those 7 and 8 sacks were directly attributable to him, because there were several times on blitz pickup that he helped Ryan Kelly at center when Ryan Kelly didn't need help, and he let two guys come between him and Shepherd, and our running back could only pick up one of the two. And so they had more guys coming than we could block. And I truly think if Anthony Steen is in this ball game, we don't have the same number of sacks. AJ doesn't seem as less comfortable, and it changes the complexion of the ball game.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, because that did happen a couple times. I think more of the sacks were attributed to Cyrus, and you know, we can talk about that. There were a couple times, and in fact, a lot of times during the game, Oklahoma was very intentional in doing delayed blitzes, and they would purposely also overload a gap. So sure. you force
communication.
You get two guys through the same hole, right? And so if it's on a delay, then the, you know, in this situation, we're talking Leon. So in this situation, it looks like the guard does have an opportunity to chip on someone else because there's no one man up for him to block. And so the right read is for him to chip. He also knows that his backside's covered because there's a running back protection. And so you make the guard commit knowing that there's now a running back covering the hole, and then you send two guys through the hole. I don't know how much of that I want to kind of pin on Leon. I don't know how much I want to pin on any lineman. I want to pin that on any lineman, much less one making his first start, because I give a little bit more credit there to the blitz design by the defense.
Well, and we can talk about this in a minute because I think we were outcoached on both sides of the ball for the second game in a row. But he is a guy who has played tackle his whole career, okay? And agility-wise, we haven't noticed him to be very agile even in the video footage of practices that we've watched,
right.
Okay? And so when AL.com has narrowed in on the offensive line for two-minute segments, and so I'm not picking on the guy. The guy did great in run blocking, but yes, a couple of the 7 or 8 sacks was attributable to him. Because we've already talked about Austin Shepherd needs all the help he can get, right? And Austin Shepherd has slowly gotten better because he thought he was going to lose his job to Grant Hill. And when you don't have Anthony Sting to right the ship next to Austin Shepherd, and now you bring in a guy who hasn't played that position ever, okay? It's one pin to reminding me about Utah, right? Because what happened in Utah? Andre Smith, 2 days before the game, gets sent home by Coach Saban. We have to bring in a new left tackle into the ball game.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's frustrating about so going back to Leon Brown real quick is that I think if you're going to bring that guy in there instead of your fifth-year senior who can play multiple positions, then you run the ball more than 25 times because his strength is run blocking. And so when you look at the final stats, you got 25 carries from your running backs and you got 10 carries from AJ, which just meant he was running for his life.
Yep.
So instead of dropping back 30 times, he really attempted 40 passes. And so that's a better way to say it. You don't have 40 pass attempts and 25 run attempts when you got a fifth-year senior hurt at a key position and you bring in a backup to play his first start of his career at that position.
Yeah. Now, if we want to talk play calling, then I think that's a little different. And so I'll finish the Leon talk this way. There were times, granted more run blocking, which is kind of to your point. There were times just given his size, and I'm not saying he is this person. I'm not saying he's going to become this person, but there were times given his mobility and, given his point of attack in the running game, there were times where he reminded me of Chance Wormack. I'm not saying he looked like Chance all day. I'm just saying there's moments where I saw some flash there. And so I think he has an opportunity to compete for one of the guard spots next year. And frankly, with Steen being gone and with Ari's performance, I think he's getting a pass on this discussion. I think both guard spots are wide open.
Well, and to make the correlation, because I'm sitting here pinning it on, movement in the offensive line, and we can talk about Oklahoma in a minute. They had 4 guys playing new positions across their line, and it didn't seem to bother them.
No.
So we had one new guy. They had 4 new. They had guys playing 4 new positions, and they seem to be okay.
Yeah, they seem to not have a problem there. I do think Ari and Cyrus are kind of getting a pass on this discussion because I think I think they both struggled. I think Kelly was our best lineman in this game. I honestly do think Leon was the second. Then I'd go, Shepherd.
Then you would struggle to put Shepherd next.
I would
be closer to Cyrus and Ari than he would be Kelly and Brown.
Yeah, there was – yeah.
And think about what you just said. The fact – because I would probably give Brown number 2 as well. And so the fact that you're even ranking him number 2 out of 5 and the other 4 are, linemen that have started all year for the most part,
yep.
That's scary in itself.
It is.
So to keep it real for a second – okay, let's just go ahead and start a segment of this last podcast of the season of guys that are playing like they're going to be a first rounder when they shouldn't be. Okay? And Cyrus will be the first guy to stand up at the table because everybody says he's going to be a first rounder. He's probably going to be a first rounder. Should he be a first rounder? not know, but you know what, man. Okay.
I think he's falling.
He's a comeback for another season.
I honestly think that he does too, and
he's not going to, but he should.
Well, yeah. Well, I can understand that, and if you look at, you know, and look, I like the guy, but this is where, you know, if you kind of look at how we've broken down every game, we started the season saying that he was playing like he wanted to come back, and he finished the season playing like he wanted to come back. Now, he had a stretch in the middle of the season. Then if you really wanted to get critical and break down, well, who was he having those performances against, he had a stretch during the middle of the season where he did look like a first-round pick, and he did look like a high first-round pick because that's a valued position in the NFL. But when they put players under just the intense scrutiny and microscope, I think some teams would back away from them. Maybe first round altogether. I think a lot of teams that would not look at him in the first top, you know, in the top 10 picks, which, you know, if he could have come out as a sophomore, he would have been a lock for, you know, top 10 picks.
I'm not saying I'm against Cyrus. He's a great guy. He's got good intelligence, good size and frame. He could be a great pro one day. I just don't think he's ready just yet. And I think when he is going against guys that challenge him speed-wise, it's been very difficult. And so I think this guy was 210, 215, and he gave Cyrus everything he wanted.
Yeah, he did. He really struggled against the speed rush. He was set up poorly. He really struggled, and then we did not help ourselves by putting the tight end there. We put the tight end. We did play a lot of, you know, 12 personnel with two tight ends. When we put a tight end next to him, you know, there was some protection. There was some help there. You know, talking about draft picks, you don't pick in the top 10 a tackle who needs a tight end. He seemed to need a tight end against Oklahoma, and we did not provide that as often as you would think that we should.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is the first example that we'll point out of us being outcoached. Okay, and
you know, I can't hold a candle to Coach Saban, and nor will think I can. But it, you know, when we were fortunate with everything that happened with four turnovers to be down by 7 points. Okay, late in the game with a chance to at least tie, but we're kind of in an obvious passing situation, and Brian Vogler has got a bum ankle, okay, then why don't you bring in another tight end that can provide help? Why don't you bring in Brandon Green? Why don't you bring in O.J. Howard? Why don't you bring in a big physical running back? Or I'm going to say, why don't you bring in your starter, T.J. Yeldon, who's got your best blitz pickup? You know, he's got the best understanding of the blitz pickup at running back, and shade him behind Cyrus. Something. And so, because then A.J. can see what's coming at him, you know, from the right tackle. And so when that last sack happened that caused that fumble, I was screaming at the TV that I couldn't believe, with everything that happened in this game, that they left Cyrus out there on the island by himself. I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, you know, at some point we needed a mercy killing there. And, you know, because he was really struggling, and we continued to do that. We could have lined Fowler back up there. You know, you mentioned Brandon Green, and you know, it makes me wonder, why did we not come out of half with the LSU template that says we're just going to line up and beat you up? We're going to line up and just out physical you, and let's bring in the 300-pound ex tackle and play him at a tight end spot. And you know, I think that I would have taken the mentality in the locker room. I would have, you know, had the mindset of, you know, we need to keep their offense off the field for one, and we kind of need to get our act together relative to our offensive performance. And so, guys, don't even look at the scoreboard. Your objective is to beat them up. That's all, you know, offensive line, offense, that's all I want you to do is just beat them up, bloody their nose. And, you know, for all the performance success that we got out of Henry for the game, I might want him to have 30 carries in the second half. You know, I want to talk about Drake not playing.
No. I'm with you. I want to get there. But let me tie something on what you just said there. Right. If that Oklahoma defensive end is 210 or 215 pounds, okay. And see, this is where Saban overthinks himself, because when Yeldon had the fumble, that's what Saban did on that drive. Saban said, I got to slow this down and I got to run the ball. And so he started running the ball, and then TJ fumbles at the 8-yard line. Well, to your point, I would have brought Brandon Green out in the second half and lined him up next to Cyrus, and I would have let those two beat the piss out of that 210-pound defensive end. And guess who wouldn't have been rushing the quarterback very fast in the fourth quarter?
Right.
Because he would have been wore slap out.
Yep. Yep.
And the other thing real quick before you touch on Drake, not only did we not give any help to Cyrus in this game, which was coaching, we didn't run hardly. We ran no draws. We ran no middle screens. We ran nothing to slow down a pass rush. Nothing. Nothing that the playbook says to run when guys are pinning their ears back did we run.
Not really. We ran a couple of wide receiver screens, you know, which that's a different dynamic. And then we did run
one to Henry. Yeah.
Yeah, the screen to Henry, obviously. But
Your typical stuff that we normally work into our offense.
Yeah, I am agreeing with you, although it sounds like I'm trying not to. I do agree with you. We did not run anything to take advantage of that. Even in the passing game, but certainly, like you said, some of those draws, they were running a lot of delayed blitzes. And so that's something you kind of have to factor into. That's a level of nuance that if we had done, you know, kind of the count, you know, 1001, 1002 run a draw, I don't know if that would have slowed down their delayed blitz. One thing I noticed, their linebackers played off the line of scrimmage. You know, it seemed like an extra yard. They were a little further back. And I know that they're used to defending a lot of spread teams. And so they tend to play, the analogy that I want to use is almost like they were playing an option game on defense, and they had their two linebackers back an extra yard, and they, you know, you take the left side of the line of scrimmage, I'm going to take the right side of the line of scrimmage, and we have the option as a defensive player to choose which hole we plug. And I think that it's probably not technically sound relative to what they were running, but that's the appearance that it had. And I thought that was a pretty novel way to defend us. And so I think that if we had run a traditional, 1001, 1002, 1003 draw, I think they probably would have fleshed that out. But that doesn't mean that there's not other things that we could have done, including just lining up and tried to beat the snot out of them.
Well, just lining up and using your size, okay? The screens, I think, to a Yeldon in the flats would have been great. Also, Kirk Herbstreit or Todd Blackledge kept calling for it, actually, not Kirk. Let's get the tight ends involved. You and I talked in the Texas A&M game about we thought we were going to have success working in between the hashes. Well, guess what? We didn't throw the ball to the tight ends across the middle of the field at all, and they had two small linebackers who were fast. And so guess what? I would have loved for O.J. Howard and for Brian Vogler with his 260-pound frame. I think he could have gone to town in the middle of that defense on a quick pass to the tight end.
Yeah, he definitely kept calling for it. There was a sack play where they actually sent two people through, the center guard hole between Kelly and Ari. And, blew up AJ. And the play, and again, I kind of went back in slow motion and watched it, 12 times to, kind of understand what was going on. But we had OJ lined up outside of Osiris, and he was running the pass route that we were throwing to. And you can see, just because they've got their sky cam, is AJ is stepping back, and the rusher is just on him as soon as he plants. But you can see kind of at the top of the screen, you can see that OJ is dragging across, cuts up field, has his the Mike linebacker's on him, has the linebacker beat, and, you know, had AJ had, another 2 seconds, another second and a half, he would have put the ball up and hit OJ for a big gain. That play was there, and that was the only one that was quite so obvious that we were trying to work the ball to AJ or OJ. What I don't understand is you see that, and in the coaching box, they know what they're running, so they know what to look for. I'm just kind of looking for it on rewind, right? They know the matchup that they want. They get the matchup that they want, but the blocking breaks down. And so there's a part of me that says, hell, why don't you run that again?
Yeah, why don't you go back to it? Right.
Yeah, let's go back to that because it was there. It was there. It's just the blocking broke down. And, you know, there were a couple of situations like that. That one, to me, was the most notable. There was another situation where we lined Henry up in the wide receiver position. I think this was just before half, and we line Henry up in the wide receiver position. Their defense, goes berserk. They have to call a timeout. The players are yelling at each other. They're taking swings at each other. They're so furious about someone being out of position, and you see their team so discombobulated and so, on the verge of meltdown. Oh, why don't you go back to that play again?
Right.
Maybe to the other side of the field or something, and let's see if they really have that figured out, because there's an opportunity. And if nothing else, let's help sow discord on their side, because if they're fighting against each other, it'll be much harder for them to unify and fight against us. And so there are a couple of situations like that. I just don't understand why we didn't, like, hey, guys, it's there. It's there. What we saw in film, what we wanted to take advantage of, it's there. So let's do it again.
No, you're exactly correct. And, another example of coaching is we talked in the Auburn game about we should have seen more Kenyon Drake.
Yes.
And we talked about the fact that TJ Yeldon shouldn't have carried the ball 26 times and he got tired, etc. So in this game, what do we see? We see another back get some work, and just to pitch you a softball, it's Derrick Henry. And in the post game, Saban talks about how well he did in the bowl practices and he earned the right to play. Well, I'm sitting here thinking, well, Coach Saban's had success in his career at LSU with a three-headed monster. You want to give Derrick Henry some – it goes back to what I said a minute ago about Leon Brown. I think they messed up on this game plan. I think this game plan should have been 45 rushes, and I would have loved to have seen 15 Yeldon carries, 15 Kenyon Drake, and 15 Henry. I'd have been totally fine with that. Give all three-headed monster to them. So why do you think no Kenyon Drake in this ballgame?
I do not have an answer for that. I will give a lot of credit to, Yeldon and his play last season and this season. I will give a tremendous amount of credit to Derrick Henry and his development. We saw his inability to line up in the right place and pick up blitzes in the opening game against Virginia Tech, and he kind of lost playing opportunity. And apparently he has learned a lot as the season has gone on. And this extra ball practice, which is, the equivalent to, an extra spring practice, I'm not surprised that he came on and he looked so good carrying the ball that
this is what we called in the preseason, right? I mean, maybe this is he lost that spring because of the broken leg, right? And he didn't get the advantage of that. But I'm just saying that I've gotten sold on Kenyon Drake's progression this year, and I don't think he deserved not to play.
Well, I was kind of building up to that. I completely agree that he should have been in there as well. And so, two things that I want to point out relative to Henry's performance, on his long touchdown run, the first player down out on the field to congratulate him was Drake. And so I thought that was impressive. Because we've talked about, he needs to not let his head kind of go into the tank. And then the second thing that I noticed on Henry is he rotated in. And so he came in first on our fourth possession. And I'm counting that one play interception possession at the kind of near the start of the game. That's truly a possession. And so Henry came in on the fourth possession. the sixth possession. Now get this, in the second half, he came in on the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th possession. And so in the second half, Henry was the starter.
And how does that make sense, right? Because so now you're not even keeping him fresh.
Yeah, he was the feature back on all of those possessions but one. There was one possession where we started with Yeldon and then brought Henry in. And in fact, his first play in was the screen.
And so to your point about the carries earlier, right? And we should have like tried to wear him out in the second half. I was counting as you were talking of the 25 carries by our running backs. 14 were in the first half. So, you know, an article I read talked about, you know, Tim Castile has gone into the film room and really tried to help this kid with his blitz pickup, and that's all great, okay? But if you only ran the ball 11 times in the second half and Derrick Henry was your feature back on 5 consecutive series, what is wrong with that formula? You got the guy that struggles in blitz pickup in the game, and you're not even running the ball very much. How does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, and it's a great point. It doesn't, right? I don't have an answer for it, right? Because, and Henry is a bright spot. Let's be very clear.
Yes.
He was a bright spot in this game. On his screen, when I rewound it and watched it, you know, in slow motion, it didn't look like he was in slow motion. Everyone else was, you know, going in the super slow-mo, and he looked like he was just, you know, that he was running like normal, you know, his camera was on normal speed, and, you know, he just looked that good, and he was running away from safeties, you know, in their secondary. And so, you know, he's a very fluid running back, a very fluid athlete. And so he was certainly a highlight. And so,
yes.
And I'm not disparaging him and saying that, you know, we should have had Drake in, but we should have had Drake in because his speed, yes. I think that he would have given another, you know, another look. He would have given them something else. Like he said, the three-headed monster, right? He would have given them something else to consider and have to stop. And, you know, him hitting the hole sometimes, you know, maybe especially when our linemen were struggling with, you know, with holding their blocks, you know. You know, we had all those runs in the first half. Nearly every run in the first half, and we got better in the second half, but then we didn't run as much. But nearly every run in the first half, someone missed a block, and it wasn't like literally someone on every running play missed a block that caused the tackle. And I think there's one exception to that, and it was kind of the old Techno Bowl thing where, you know, they called our play. And when they call our play, it really doesn't matter. They're going to beat us. And so let's line it up. And then everyone just do your frickin' job. And if we had come out in the second half with a mentality of, guys, quit jerking around and missing your block. Let's make your block. And we're just and your objective, scoreboard independent, is to beat the living snot out of them. And if we had come out of the second half, you know, I call it the LSU footprint. If we had come out with that game plan in the second half, you know, it's a different contest.
It is. And to your point about Drake real quick, right, and what he could have brought to the game, okay, how nice would it have been just to do a pitch sweep to him and use his speed on the edge? Just something different that they had not seen in the ball game.
Yeah, after hitting him in the mouth a couple times, let's make him sprint to the edge against Drake. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. That would have been the game plan, you know, stepping off the bus. That certainly would have been the game plan in the second half.
I just didn't understand the coaching in those kind of situations. I want to touch on TJ Yeldon's fumble for a second. I just want to say my opinion on this is he ran into Ari.
Yep.
And he stuck his hand out instead of he had both hands on the ball. He stuck his hand out to try to gently move Ari to one side to go around him. My opinion of this, had that been a stupid defender and not Ari, right, he'd have just gone down. That because it was his own player, he takes his hand off the ball, his left hand off the ball, and puts his hand out there, and now the ball's not as protected, and the fumble happens.
Well, Aru was standing between Yeldon and the first down. He had to move. He had to move Ari in that situation. And so when he...
But it wasn't a third down is what I'm saying, David. Okay? Right there, what Yeldon's got to understand with his still young self is right there, we need you to hold on to the ball.
Well, that was a third and one. And so Ari was in the way. Now, I don't know how gently he hit Ari, because I think he lowered his shoulder and said, I've got to get this yard, and that means I've got to move you. And so he actually hit Ari, and Ari spun, and his arm kind of flailing as he spun around, was what jarred the ball. Now, so I put that on Ari. He needs to get out of the way. He needs to know where the first down is, and he needs to know what the hole the running back is coming through. And so if he gets in the middle of the hole, he has to know that he's in the way. And so I put a lot of that on Ari, needing to have gotten out of the way. I will put a little bit on Yeldon as well, because as he approached the hole, he could tell that Ari, he should have been able to tell that Ari was struggling with his block. But Cyrus had his man beat, and he was pushing him, at a 45-degree angle downfield. And if Yeldon had cut and then just went off Cyrus's rear towards the sideline, he would have easily gotten the first down, maybe much more. So I put the bulk of that on Ari. But if you go back and look at Yeldon, he could have cut that. He could have bounced that out to the left and had plenty of room to run.
Well, that was obviously a huge momentum thing, because that was Saban saying, I'm bringing Henry in to try to be physical here with Oklahoma, and we're going to just try to slow the game down. And then that fumble happened. And so the timing of that was just horrendous.
Yeah, that was. That was our fifth play, or I'm sorry, our fifth drive of the game. That was an 11-play drive, so it was our longest drive of the game. And we were doing, what we do, right, is methodically move the ball down the field, 10, 11, 12-play drive for a touchdown. Very disheartening. Gives the defense a break. Very disheartening for the opponent's defense. And, had we completed that, obviously it would have been 7 for us and, not 7 for them. But I think it would have been much more demoralizing for Oklahoma that, they're bend but not break. They're comfortable with that. And so that was invigorating for them, but very frustrating for our offense. I think if we had scored that touchdown again, it's the, we've laughed at some coaches who said this, yes. Game pivots on 3 or 4 or 5 different things. And, we've laughed at coaches that have said that in years past, but I think it's true. The more football I watch, the more I realize it's true. And I think that, certainly that fumble, resonates as one of those 5 plays.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, I want to quickly touch on AJ McCarron for a second, because Obviously I'm very appreciative of what he's done in his career at Alabama. And I think the pressure got to him, for the coaches not doing what they should have done to give him more protection, like we've talked about. And so I think they got in his head a little bit, but that first interception he threw was horrendous. And just to be fair here, I think he definitely, his ball safety issues, it kind of reminded me about, he kind of ended his career a little bit from the ball safety standpoint of how he started his career at Alabama. He had a little flinging mentality there, it seemed like, on those interceptions.
Yeah, that first interception, that overthrow to Norwood was, there's no explanation for that. That was a horrible decision. He was near triple covered. I mean, there were 3 defenders sort of in the vicinity of where he was. He clearly overthrew him, and, the defender was able to get the ball. He had actually, Howard dragging, early on that play, and then, kind of the trailing, trailing Howard, by a few yards, a couple of seconds, he had Yeldon wide open as well. And so I could see him overlooking Howard because he's waiting maybe for Norwood to break, but he should have realized that Norwood's not going to be open, and then check down to Yeldon, and Yeldon had you know, plenty of room to run. And again, that's a momentum, that's a significant momentum thing.
We just intercepted the ball. Yep.
Yeah, it's deflating for their offense to have given up that interception. But their interception is washed away. It didn't happen because you get the ball right back.
And you're exactly correct. And as frustrating as that pick was, his other pick was a bigger deal. You know, when he threw that ball that he shouldn't have thrown, trying to force that to Amari and throws it behind Amari, and we were second and 10 at their 48-yard line, and they return the ball to our 13, and then they score on the very next play, there's another huge momentum thing.
Well, it was, and I give a little bit, he should have held on to the ball, but I give a little bit of credit. He should have held on the ball and taken the sack there. And I give a little bit of credit to, you know, to the play call. You know, that was, I guess, the last play, the eighth play on our sixth drive. We had four wide receivers with an offset back, yelled into to the left, and they sent two defenders through the same hole again. You know, they did that. It was just more of an outside hole, and they picked up. Yeldon picked up the first one, but the second one got to AJ just immediately and yes. was in his passing lane. And so AJ had to throw. He couldn't step through and put, you know, everything on the ball. So it looked like kind of a lazy pass, but he couldn't step through his follow through because the defender was right there. And because the defender was there, it forced AJ in a little three-quarter arm motion. And so that's not his typical arm groove. And then he couldn't follow through on the pass. And so those two things combined, you know, a lot was left off that ball, and it just couldn't get there to Norwood. I think, or to Cooper. I think that had that second rusher not been there, you know, you send one rusher and the running back picks it up, then, you know, I think that he completes that pass.
Oh, and I'm with you, but he's got to understand the moment there. He's got to understand that it's second. And this is, I'm sorry, I can't say it like that. He's always been great at this his whole career. Okay. And so 99.5% of the time he gets this. Yep. And he throws the ball away and he doesn't take a sack. He's got right there. He just got caught up in the moment, and they, you know, Yeldon's just fumbled the series before. They've just taken the lead, but it's second and 10 at the 48. Live to fight another day on third down. And if you don't get it, punt it deep. And you got a great punter, pin them deep and make them go 99 yards.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, at that point, there's a minute 21 and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, take the sack. It's, you know, I'd rather the sack than lose the ball like we did. And of course they scored, you know, take the sack there in this lineup and run another play. You know, we could have potentially gotten some points. They got seven, and then we had an opportunity on a field goal and we missed it. And so, you know, going into half, you know, again, just the momentum was.
Yes.
Was
and we're down by
soaring.
14. We're down by 14 then. Going back to your point, had he just lived to fight another day, we go into the half down by four by a touchdown. Coach Saban can say, "Look, we're only down a score, guys. We're going to start running the hell out of the ball."
And that assumes you know, if we take the sack there, we hold the ball. That assumes that we do nothing with it, right?
Right.
It would have been third and long because of the sack, but. You know, I'm not going to rule out the possibility that we would not have gotten points there, but I think it would have been much more difficult for them to get points. And so if we go into half down by seven without them overflowing momentum, again, that's another play that maybe has an impact. I want to pick out one thing. You know, Norwood, I wish that he would have been able to go out with a stellar performance. You know, I like White putting up 139 yards. I like Cooper putting up 120. I would have liked for Norwood just, you know, for sentimental reasons to have gone out with a big game and, you know, 100 yard and yards and a touchdown. But what he did do, and unfortunately it was for naught because it was the last play before the field goal, before the half, but he did a typical, you know, Kevin Norwood thing. You know, AJ's under pressure, and so he's rolling to the sidelines. We can't give up yards. In fact, we have to, you know, gain yards to get in position for a field goal. And Norwood just plants himself on the sideline, plants his 2 feet on the sideline, and just starts, you know, like a tree, like timber. He just starts leaning out of bounds, and he effectively extended the width of the field by an extra yard, and AJ was able to just put the ball right there. He was able to catch it, hold on, keep his feet down, and, you know, got us a big gain. And it's a play like that that, you know, we talk about the NFL scouts just, you know, really breaking down players' performance. It's a play like that that, you know, that personnel, you know, coaches and player personnel, directors have to look at that and say, that's a guy that we want on our team. Because he makes those types of catches. He knows how to flow with the quarterback. He knows how to position himself to put his 2 feet, you know, in college, it's just one, but, you know, put his 2 feet in the ground and then just start to lean out of bounds where, you know, he either catches the ball or no one does. That's an NFL play right there that he made. And I swear I'm going to put together my top 10 favorite plays for Kevin Norwood. And that's going to make the list because that was phenomenal. I hate that it didn't kind of lead to a score. But when you just look at what he did athletically there and just football IQ, phenomenal.
Oh, it was. And, you know, as you're talking about Kevin Norwood, I'm sitting here thinking about all the talent that we have at wide receiver, and Bob Stoops talking about, you know, they're the most talented core group of wide receivers he thought there was in the country, you know, going into this game. You know, we talk about this pass rush and we talk about, you know, trying to slow them down. You know, that little great play that we would do with Chris John Jones where he would line up like as an H-back and he would drag behind the offensive line and get a quick pass from AJ and go 15 yards. Didn't see that play. Didn't see Mr. Quick yards after the catch even get a ball thrown to him.
Nope.
And so I take nothing away from what you just said, but with the wide receiver core that we have, and just like in the national championship game last night, they said Florida State in the second half's got to get the ball out quick and got to start throwing the ball short, quick passes. You should have distributed the ball to more people. You got so many weapons, and you didn't even use a guy like Chris John Jones.
Yep. I mean, you know, we kind of kidded before during the season, you know, do we have too many talented players? You know, because not everyone is going to get, you know, seven touches and 100 yards. But, you know, but we could have had certainly three or four more players get
just, you know, a couple,
one or two touches. Yeah.
What if you and I would have been the offensive coordinator and we're sitting there with Drake and we throw a toss sweep to him a couple times and we drag Chris John Jones behind the line of scrimmage for his little quick herky-jerky pass that they do, their misdirection play that they've done eight times this season. Just work some of that in. And I just think we played into Oklahoma too much.
Yeah, I
agree. With our scheme. Well, hey, what else do you have on offense? Because I could keep going on and on with offense.
Yeah, we definitely could. Why don't you give me your mini game ball on offense?
Oh man, that's tough. It'd be too easy to give it to Henry because he still qualifies as a mini game ball, and he obviously had a phenomenal performance. I'm probably going to surprise you here. I'm going to say that he shouldn't have been in the game, in my opinion, but given probably more good plays than bad plays, I'm probably going to give it to Leon Brown.
Okay. Okay.
Because I think the fact that he ranks number two, right, deserves him to win that award.
Agreed. And so I had down all along that I was going to give it to Leon Brown. And then as I was giving my soliloquy on Kevin Norwood, I realized I wanted to give him the mini game ball. And so I'm glad that you gave it to one of my guys and I gave it to the other of my guys.
All right.
So my two guys get mini game balls. Let's flip the field to defense. And what struck you there?
I got tired of hearing the announcers talk about how many games this Oklahoma quarterback has missed and that he came back and threw for almost as many yards in this ball game as he did the whole season leading up to this game. He only threw for 400 and something yards, I get to hear the announcers talk about how he's a running quarterback and how the bowl practices helped him fine tune his throwing skills. Well, okay. I don't want to take anything away from the kid. Okay. But this doesn't remind me of Utah. This reminds me of South Carolina and Garcia. He played the game of his freaking life. And the handful of games that we've lost recently, a quarterback has come out of nowhere to play the game of his life. And Mark May said it best after the game. There on that throw where that receiver, okay, by the way, the only receiver that they said was going to challenge us decided to beat us all over the field.
Yes.
But on the throw that he beat Deion Blue on, that was a phenomenal pass.
Yes.
And that is not a pass I expect a running quarterback who struggled earlier in the season as a freshman to make. And so I just got nauseated as the game progressed about hearing how this guy has just been all world today out of nowhere. It just got nauseating.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, Ballou got beat on a double move there, which is kind of out of character, you know, for him. But yeah, this quarterback had, you know, had a really good day. You know, they gave us fits. You know, I did not break down every defensive snap. You know, my stomach just couldn't take it to watch all the defensive, you know, struggles that we had. And I don't necessarily have an answer, and you know, maybe you and I can talk about this a little bit, and maybe between the two of us we'll have an idea. But the tempo offense gives us fits, and we've seen it. You know, you talk about, you know, losing two games in a row. Well, we lost two games in a row to tempo offenses, and it was not always a lot of big plays, but a bunch of just play after play after play after play after play, and just, you know, the slow bloodletting of you know, Auburn and now, you know, Oklahoma driving down the field, you know, especially in the first half. We seem to have a little bit more for them in the second half. You know, had we not turned the ball over, that would have helped our defense. You know, again, we've covered that ground. But, you know, what do you think about this tempo offense that Oklahoma ran and we seem to struggle with? How do we defend it?
You know, they go into this game saying the coaches said the only two games we had a tough time with this year was Texas A&M and Auburn. Mm-hmm. And so they went into this game saying they were going to run this. I think the up-tempo offense goes – I think the challenges that we struggled with this year with the up-tempo has more to do with the lack of a dominating secondary and the lack of a dominating three cornerbacks. That's what I tie it all to. And so in this ball game, we were sitting here taking, they had all these little fast, small wide receivers, and we're sitting here with their small, fast wide receivers. And we're getting mismatches with a safety in the slot, okay, covering their wide receivers. And so you sit there and watch Jarrett Williams and Landon Collins struggle on numerous occasions covering their fast little scat backs.
Yep.
And it reminded me of South Carolina and Utah games, because you and I have talked before about when this team has been dominant, we have had three cornerbacks and we have been able to put the third cornerback in the slot and essentially shut down these teams with these four and five wide receiver sets. And so we cannot do that this year. I don't know why Geno's getting all the play at safety, why he didn't get any love at cornerback. We can talk Eddie Jackson in a minute with all the musical chairs at cornerback. But this is what, I guess, in a long-winded way, I'm telling you that if we were able to be better in the back end of the defense and take away the passing game, which is what we've been able to do with three national champions, the rest of it takes care of itself.
Why did we not, you know, if we look at last season, our defense, especially our secondary, got significantly better when we committed ourselves to playing Geno Smith, you know, as the star.
Yeah.
And I take absolutely nothing away from Jarek's performance this year. He has earned multiple minigame balls from us.
Yes.
But when he starts to have a little bit of a struggle, and I did not see, and it's hard on TV, I did not see Geno Smith play at all. And so we know that he's been the starting dime back, you know, the starting money. But knowing that he has experience at the star, why did we not maybe rotate him in at star and give him a look there?
I don't know the answer to that. And
because his bloodlines is as a corner, whereas Jarek's, you know, we know that's as a safety. And so to getting, you know, your point about, you know, successful with three corners, you know, three high quality corners. Okay, maybe we don't have as high quality corners, but darn, let's at least get three of them on the field.
Yes, and so this is another coaching thing, right? This is where I think we were outcoached, is Oklahoma could not run the ball. They had no success really running the ball. Their starting tailback had 17 carries for 49 yards.
Yep.
And yes, everybody, you heard that correctly. An average of 2.6. And so they only tried to carry the ball 30 times, and five of those was the quarterback for a measly 12 yards.
Yep.
And so they attempted 44 passes. So this goes back to your point about, just like we said about Drake a minute ago on the offensive side of the ball, if you've got a team attempting 44 passes and they can't run on you, then take out your damn other safety and bring in a corner.
Yep. Yep.
And so at the end, so take nothing away from Jarek Williams, but I just think that little extra speed in the secondary would have made a difference. And so at the very end of the game, when he gets that pass interference penalty, I see Geno flash across the screen on TV. So I know, I'm sorry, let me back up. Geno was in the game on that third down play, and he was going toward the quarterback. So in that example, coaching again, I'm sitting here scratching my head saying, wait a minute, why isn't Geno covering that fastest receiver that's giving your cornerback fits tonight? Why isn't Jarek Williams rushing the quarterback? And let's see if Geno can make that third down stop that we've seen him make one play in a game in the past few games. Because now you need it, right? Because now the game's on the line. But no, we're going to send Geno to the quarterback, and we're going to have the strong safety cover the quick scat back.
Yep.
I don't understand that at all. What are we missing? You know, I want some listeners to send us emails and see if we're just like so full of ourselves, because I don't understand that. That coaching is hard for me to comprehend.
I don't understand it either. And you know, I want to be careful, you know, and if people listen to us, I think they get it. We're not just saying put another corner out there just to put another corner out there. There's sort of a method to the madness. We've always, you know, last year and this year have been the exceptions when we've played a safety at the star position. You know, and last year we realized the error of that. And that's when we put Geno in, and our defense, I think, really turned a corner. And so if you go back to, you know, Javi, you know, Milner, you know, yes. Even, and you go back to, you know, who's the JUCO
the kid that came in and played star. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, we've had corners at the star position, you know, kind of from jump.
That's been Saban's thing.
And so, you know, when we have Geno who played the position so darn well last year, I just don't understand at this point when we realize that's a deficient, that is a point of deficiency against, and there's different flavors of tempo, right? You know, Auburn was a tempo who runs the ball. Oklahoma's a tempo that passes the ball, right? And so, you know, they're both
exactly
ice cream.
Exactly correct. Chocolate
vanilla, right? And so maybe, you know, Vinny was the player that we felt like we missed against Auburn because of the running game. Geno's the player that I feel like we missed because he's a corner in the tempo passing game.
And to your point, real quick, I would love to go back and see how many snaps he had in that game.
I personally did not see him at all.
And Daquan
but that doesn't mean he didn't
name, by the way.
What's that?
It was driving me crazy. Daquan Menzie is the guy you were thinking
of. Daquan Menzie, yes. Thank you.
But to your point, I saw him flash on that very last play, that third down pass interference, because the camera angle, when they showed the replay of the coverage, you saw Geno at the top of the screen going after the quarterback. And my immediate thought was to throw something at the TV and be like, why aren't those two guys in different places there? And so I just don't understand. What you just said there was a great comment. It's a whole different tempo. Auburn was run the ball 44 times, and Oklahoma was throw the ball 44 times. And so you should have had two different people in there in those situations.
Yep.
And this is a great segue into Eddie Jackson, okay? Because just like I was perplexed with the Leon Brown, I don't get Eddie Jackson. We talked all the love about Eddie Jackson, and I take none of that away from Eddie Jackson. And we talk about why he got in the doghouse and everything the listeners heard us talk about. I get all that.
Okay.
But why do you take a kid who has not played for weeks now and put him in a critical starting role? I think somebody for AL.com was, you know, talking about we've had six or seven different cornerback, you know, starting lineups this season. I just don't understand why you have yet another one at that point in time. I don't understand why you don't put Geno with more experience. If you're not comfortable with Cyrus and Sylvie, you know, I told you two podcasts ago that the way he looked on the sideline, he wasn't coming back from that ankle injury.
Yep.
If you're not comfortable with Cyrus, then why don't you put Geno in there at the start? I would have rather throw Geno out there at the starting cornerback opposite Ballou than Eddie Jackson.
Even though he's never played that position?
Yes.
For us?
Yes, because I just think it's a bad spot to put Eddie Jackson in. And I guess I want your thoughts on this. I was equally as perplexed as I was seeing Leon Brown in the game as I was when I saw, you know, who the corner was opposite Ballou.
Well, I was not nearly as surprised. I think we probably thought that they were going to try to mix it up similar to, you know, Eddie Jackson's big. You know, I'm not just saying this because the data points line up. It's true. His big performance, his big breakout performance was against Ole Miss, right?
Yes.
Ole Miss, you know, kind of runs some tempo. They're not that good at passing the ball, but they have a mobile quarterback, and then they'll try to run the ball a little bit. We probably thought that's what Oklahoma would do. Oklahoma plays a two-quarterback system. Ole Miss plays a two-quarterback system. One of the quarterbacks, you know, was a 50% passer. They're good. You know, what is it? The Belldozer was like a 45% passer. The good passer, you know, he shredded us, but he was 52% on the season. And so if you look at how they've attacked during the season, their methodology is very similar to Ole Miss. They just might be a little bit better at it. And so in that context, I think that Eddie Jackson's a good selection.
Well, I agree with those points. And when I heard the 52% completion, you know, I was like, oh, great. He's completed what, 70% of his passes today.
Yep. I was actually happy to see Eddie Jackson. So we have very differing opinions on this. I honestly do think that we thought that their attack would be very similar to Ole Miss. And that is a game plan that, you know, there's been talk about one of the, you know, after his injury that he was in the doghouse because he could not carry over concepts from game plan to game plan. Well, guess what? Here's the frickin' game plan you already know.
Now that's a good point. And now you've got, not only is it the one you know, the only other one you've been a starter for, but you get 4 or 5 weeks to prepare for it.
Yes. And then it just happens to turn out that they do something different.
Well, I guess maybe, you know, now granted he's flashed more than Cyrus has. And so I guess it was just more of the, he hasn't been in the spotlight and now we're thrusting him into this big situation. And maybe the bigger issue is just part of what has really hurt us this year is we haven't had two go-to cornerbacks, much less the three that Saban's been used to.
Now, I do think that, and so Blue got banged up and he went out, and so we brought in, you know, Maurice Smith. And that was a little bit frustrating. I was concerned when Ballou was out. But one thing that I started to think, and it's more geared towards next season, is, you know, we've got, you know, Mo Smith and freshman Eddie Jackson out there together, both true freshmen. Man, is that our defensive backfield? Is that the cornerbacks for the next couple of years? I think that's something that we can grow into.
Well, maybe. But what was interesting about the Maurice Smith thing is when Blue comes out, we're wondering who's going to get the call, right? Well, Maurice Smith came out, but he only came in for a few plays, and then he went to the bench and Cyrus came in.
Yeah, Cyrus came in. No, I agree.
So that made me like, okay, well, did you just not know which one you wanted it to be? So you thought you'd try them both? I mean, that was equally as disconcerting. I mean, that just goes to show you we have no freaking clue at the cornerback position currently. And so this speaks to the guys already talking about next season. They're talking about the 5-star Tony Brown and, you know, how he's, you know, what his opportunity is. And obviously Marlon Humphrey as well. Yep. This is not what this show's about, but if you can bring in 2 5-star cornerbacks, buddy, this might be a team I'd sign with for 2014.
Well, and Tony Brown, you know, and again, this kind of gets us in another show, but you know, he's already on campus. He's going to participate in all season workout drills as well as spring practice. And so that'll be a fun, everyone's going to be watching the quarterback battle with, you know, I clearly understand why, but that cornerback position, you know, we need to do a show leading up to spring practice about, you know, the top 10 things we're watching. That will be high on the list.
It will be. And as another segue for us that I think this team was lacking is just a dominant pass rusher. We don't have one. And, right. You know, another guy that I want to sign up for the playing like you want to stay next year is Adrian Hubbard. I know you're faced with a decision again like you were last year, but I really don't know what decision you're faced with. If a team wants to sign you up based on measurables, then okay. And, you know, when he pinned his ears back on that one play against LSU and rushed that quarterback, I was like, where has this been all season?
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I don't think we had the consistent performance from our defensive ends this year at all. And that's another, we did not set the edge on the defensive end of the football.
No, when you talk, you know, relative to how we introduced the season and kind of the upside that we thought and the performance and stats that we thought Hubbard would put up. And so you think, you know, you kind of have that context in mind and you say that our leading sack artist, quote unquote, this season was A'shaun Robinson at 5.5 sacks. As positive a statement as that is for A'shaun, who really is an interior defensive lineman, it is two sides of the same coin. That is high praise for A'shaun. That is an indictment for Hubbard.
It is. It absolutely is. And I don't know if he sees it that way, but he should. And, you know, it also goes back to the, you know, just like we've talked about at the cornerback position, the defensive line has been in the same boat because obviously, you know, they haven't been able to find an answer. Dalvin Tomlinson, who's a redshirt freshman by his own right, you know, they thought could be a guy. And the reason you have seen so much from the likes of Jonathan Allen and Tim Williams, you know, high school, you know, played in high school last year is because we just don't have it. And so take nothing away from Jonathan Allen, you know, on that stupid touchdown pass where, you know, he was just floating to the sideline, the Oklahoma quarterback, and completed that pass to the receiver on Landon Collins' guy. You know, Jonathan Allen's the defensive end there, and he just collapses the pocket and doesn't set the edge and doesn't protect the edge. And so now the quarterback is rolling out, and the only guy he's got rolling out with him is Brandon Ivory. And Todd Blackledge called it.
Yep.
He said he had all day. He didn't have to hurry. And I'm sitting here, and I'm sitting here watching. You know, I'm sitting here watching on the replay, and I'm watching Denzel Duvall, who's on a mad sprint from the other side of the field, and he just can't get there quick enough.
Yeah, you know, that was top flight analysis there by Blackledge.
Yes.
And when he says it, you think, well, yeah, that's logical, but you don't think it until you hear an ex-quarterback say it. You know, I'm being chased by a nose tackle. I know that all he's trying to do is contain me. He's not attacking me. He's not trying to tackle me. So I can string this out and string this out and string this out. And I don't have to run full speed because, you know, my speed relative to his. And so I can string this play out and see if something develops. Whereas if it were a defensive end or a linebacker, they are coming to strike me.
Yes.
They're not just trying to string me out and hope that I run out of bounds. They are coming to attack. And I have to respond to that differently. And maybe I do just have to throw the ball away. And I think that is, that may be one of the nuggets, you know, one of the more underrated nuggets that you're going to get from a commentator. I thought that was spot on. I think if you listen to that and kind of digested that, you're a smarter football fan for it.
Oh, you are. And I just wanted to use that to highlight the defensive end position that, against Auburn, our defensive ends bit the fullback dive.
Yep.
And they gave up the edge. And in this game, they gave up the edge on situations where, you know, I wanted to have a Lorenzo Washington, right? Or I wanted to have a Brandon Dietrich on the team. And we didn't have one. Hey, let me touch on one more thing here. I know I'm hogging this part, but I got one more guy I want to sign up for playing like you want to be here next year. And that's Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, because I know that, you know, they said he was going to be the number one safety coming into the season and all this. And I know that the guy had a leg injury after, you know, played with a hurt leg in Auburn and has already had it scoped and has come back, and all that is awesome. That's all awesome. And I'm glad that he's done that for his team. But we call it like we see it. There's 6 minutes left in the game. We've got them in a third and long. They sit there and call the play. Ha ha has got the guy dead to rights, 3 yards short of a first down. All he's got to do is wrap up.
Yep.
Instead, he puts his shoulder into him. How you know I love when DBs don't use their arms. He thinks he's knocked him down. The guy just rolls for a first down. Ha-Ha gets up and is congratulating himself that he's made a big stop. And then he looks over and says, oh, no, he got a first down.
Yep.
And so right there, we could have got the ball back with 6 minutes left in the game. And now we would have got the ball back with 6 minutes left in the game, and now it's a 4-point game and not a 7-point game. Now running the ball looks a little different when you got 6 minutes left in the game. And now maybe their defensive ends can't pin their ear backs against A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, I don't think that Ha-Ha stays. I think he does leave. You know,
how frustrating. My point is in the national championship game last night, I see Florida State safeties come up, and they made a hit like, you don't want to be in my path.
Yep.
And there was an opportunity for your one of your leaders to come in and make a key play and just didn't use fundamental football.
Yep. Yeah. I agree with you there. Where are you going? Unless you have something else you want to cover on defense, where are you going mini game ball?
Man, that's just,
you know what? Put a pin in that. You know, we're out of practice. What do you got for me on the Mosley report?
You know, Mosley, when I went back and looked at the stats with the 5 solo and the 1 assist, you know, I don't recall seeing him really make much of an impact, to be very fair, to be very just call it like I see it. You know, we've talked before about his quiet games of 12 tackles. Well, you know, I don't recall the plays. There wasn't any plays that jumped off the page at me from CJ, really, to be fair. I thought they did a great job of offensive play calling to take him out of plays and to put him at an angle where he didn't have a chance. Okay. And so, you know, I'll just point out a play on that last drive when they were trying to milk it. Great play call. They call a middle screen and they drag the running back right behind the line of scrimmage, right behind the Brandon Ivories. But first of all, they action him out wide and that sends CJ out with him. And then they've got an offensive lineman waiting for him, standing there, waiting for him when he cuts back so that the running back has no impediment to getting a first down. And that play jumped out at me and I said, they have schemed around CJ this whole game plan. I thought Oklahoma did a great job of scheming him away from the play.
Yeah, I'm spot on with you there. There wasn't anything. There wasn't sort of a crowning, you know, moment in the game, and so I completely agree with you there. You know, maybe you know, because this is the last Mosley report we get. You know, I want to get a little sentimental a little bit. And, you know, you mentioned before that this is our fourth year doing the podcast. And, you know, and I have kidded before, I think even this season, that, you know, CJ's kind of the, you know, he's almost our podcast mascot, right? Because, you know, he was just, you know, a wee pup, right? When we started this thing as a true freshman and, you know, in some of our very early shows. And, you know, I would challenge someone to go back and listen because the audio, you know, is grainy, and you know, we were not that we're really good at it now, but we're certainly better now than we were then. But you know, some of the comments that I remember us making about CJ back in the day about this is going to be one to watch, and you know, of course, his career has kind of blossomed over the last couple of years, and so you know, we'll keep doing the podcast, but he'll be gone, and that'll feel funny, right?
It will feel funny, and I'm glad you said that because we just call it like we see it. You were asking me about the Mosley report as it relates to this ball game, but we said at the beginning of the season that there were two players that didn't have to come back that could have gone pro, and they were A.J. McCarron and C.J. Mosley.
Sure.
And we said both of these guys came back because they wanted to try to win another one. And so this team, okay, I think I heard that we had the chance, had we beat Oklahoma, to tie Boise State for the record for the most wins in 5 years at 58. So the irony is, you know, had we not lost the last two, we would have broken the record for the most wins a program has had in 5 years. We wouldn't have had 57 wins in 5 years if it wasn't for the likes of A.J. McCarron and C.J. Mosley.
No. So hats off, you know, tip of the hat to both of them. You know, every season it feels like, you know, as seniors graduate, you know, there's more players that I want to kind of put on my all-time list. And there's been a lot of them the last, you know, few years, these Saban years. But, you know, I think AJ and CJ are you know, firmly entrenched on that list.
No, I would agree with that. Who would you have for your mini bank game ball defense? I'm struggling with this one.
Well, and I am too. I think that this is a mini game ball, just because I'm not really pleased with the performance of our defense. But I know that you're going to go a different route because of the road that I'm taking. But I'm going Eddie Jackson. You know, 9 solos, an assist. His first start since about mid-season. I think there's something to this freshman Eddie Jackson. He may net out if we get both of these 5 stars and they come on and really blow up. He may net out as a free safety or a money or star kind of as his career progresses. But he is going to be a playmaker on the field, and you know. You know, maybe I don't give him the same sort of prediction quality as I had for CJ, but I like what I see with this Eddie Jackson kid.
That's a good call, because I do think he made a lot of plays, because, you know, he had a lot of plays come his way. Yep. And I guess what sticks out at me is, you know, kind of like Cyrus sticks out at me for, you know, given, you know, the last play there in the Auburn game where he leaves his receiver free to come to Nick Marshall. You know, that Eddie Jackson play where he gives up the big pass play late in the game, you know, where he gets beat 1-on-1. But I guess if I look at the whole body of work of the game, you know, finishing with, you know, 10 tackles, he probably had more good plays than he had bad plays. He definitely is one of the best tacklers that we have at the cornerback position. I'm going to give my game ball, while he probably doesn't qualify for many game ball, I'm going to give it to Trey DePriest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, for the same reason I think Jarrett Williams shouldn't have been in there very much, I don't think Trey should have been in there very much for what we just talked about with him throwing the ball 44 times. But he had his opportunities, and he made the best of them with a very respectable 6 solos and one assist and one tackle for a loss. And so and he's you know, he's already quickly announced that he's coming back. Not that I think he should not make that decision, but hopefully something he can build on, because his role is going to change next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a good pick, and I like – you know, Trey has not sort of blossomed, you know, kind of top end like I thought that he would. But, you know, one of the underrated things about Trey is he's been a day one starter. You know, he came in and, you know, he started in Saban's system at the linebacker spot, you know, from jump. And that's a difficult thing to do. I think that, you know, I think he's a smart kid. I think maybe his football IQ, maybe his athleticism does not keep up with his football IQ, but I think that he's a smart kid, and yeah, I look forward to you know, maybe him dropping a little weight, but you know, him having a big spring, and you know, hopefully bouncing back for a big season next year.
Absolutely.
Anything on special teams worth mentioning?
Yeah, I think you should have given Adam a. Just like I think you should have given Adam some opportunity in the Auburn game, you've already killed Cade's confidence by the way you handled the place-kicking opportunities in the Auburn game. I would have rolled the dice, and I would have let Adam Griffith kick that first field goal attempt.
Ah, okay. Well, that's interesting.
You've already blown the kid's confidence, and now you expect him to come out how bring him out in that thing, right? Into the half, we're down by 14. We really need you to get some points on the board. That seems like you're just setting him up for failure again.
Well, we had already made a field goal by that time. And so the very first field goal, we did bring him in, and he made it. You know, I think if you don't roll him out there to start the game, I mean, I think you're publicly eviscerating him.
Okay. Well, that's a situation where maybe I would have, you know, I would have given the other guy a chance there.
Yeah.
Wrong or right, I might have would have done that.
No, I hear what you're saying. I liked the couple of, you know, this is definitely looking for the silver lining. I liked the couple of tackles that Cade had, but, you know, by no circumstance should he have been having to make the tackles. The only thing that I really kind of note that I have on special teams is D Hart's tackle at the beginning of the game.
Oh yeah, you know, he's made a few of those kind of plays, and then also wasn't. I was trying to think as far as he had the big play, and the other thing that jumped out at me is that Landon Collins was not on kickoff coverage. Derrick Henry was there in his place.
Yeah.
I was surprised as to why one of your most impactful special teams players does not get in the game on special teams in that situation.
Yeah, and I read a little bit afterwards that he was a little dinged up, and so he was not 100%, and that may explain a couple things during the game. But I think that certainly explains him not getting the reps and not getting the snaps on special teams. So, you know, that makes that makes sense, you know, from that perspective. Anything else on special teams or you?
No, man. I think I'm good there.
All right. Well, we survived our first show on consecutive losses. A very frustrating loss to Oklahoma. I do want to give hats off because, you know, and I think we've done that during the show, you know, giving them credit for out coaching us and certainly in elements of the game and some of their play calls and some of the things that they've done. So, you know, we're not trying to disparage Oklahoma. If anything, I think we've kind of disparaged or at least kind of waded through some of our frustrations. And, you know, that's part of the experience. I think that what we need to do, Tom, is as we get into recruiting or post-recruiting, you know, talk about that a little bit, because I think there's still a ton of exciting things that we have. There's a million questions that we want to talk through and ask and answer, because that's, you know, it's the minutia that that we enjoy. And so we want to get out and do some of that. And maybe we need to have some more shows in which we step through those components. But there's a ton of exciting things about this team. So we're going to, you know, we're going to lick our wounds and we're going to come back, you know, as a podcast and as a team, you know, better than ever. We're going to put together some, you know, maybe some post-recruiting shows, definitely a lot of content around the spring and, you know, carry us into summer drill.
So no, absolutely.
All of that.
No, absolutely. And there is one more thing I want to very quickly mention, which kind of just piggybacks on what you just said. We just call it like we see it. For those that have never listened, we just call it like we see it game by game, and we're not going to pull any punches. But we will also say and acknowledge that most teams would give to have one national title in 5 years, much less 3 in 5 years. And so for all of the frustration that we've expressed today, we still have had 3 national titles in the past 5 years because of Nick Saban.
Yeah. Oh,
so, you know, so we understand the, you know, that's why we've said in earlier shows that people have listened to, enjoy this ride, because it's not going to last forever.
Yeah. You know, if we want to put things, you know, in perspective, and I know, you know, we like to think, well, we're Alabama, we don't compare ourselves to other programs. But, you know, think about this for a minute. Clemson is celebrating the first time in the history of their program that they've won 11 games two years in a row. So the first time ever that they've had consecutive seasons with 11 games. Well, I kind of forget how many seasons we've had just right here, right now, in which we've won 11 games.
Yes.
So, and that's just this run that we are currently still in. Feels like maybe we're not, but we're still in it. And we're peeling off 11 win seasons like we're in a strip club or something. And they're celebrating, you know, and they're celebrating the first time in the history of their program that they've had consecutive 11 win seasons. And so I know that, you know, I kind of am comparing us to Clemson. I'm not meaning it kind of in that way, but I'm just saying we're still in a very good position. And I think that we're going to have some pretty significant rebound going into next season, even with some of the questions that we have.
Oh, absolutely. Well, man, I've enjoyed the season. It didn't end like we wanted to, but I am ready to turn the page.
Absolutely. Page turned. Hey, guys, we'll be back. Stay tuned. Sign up for the show on iTunes, and so you'll get them dropped overnight into your podcast feed, or go to the website and sign up for our newsletter, and you'll get the show notes alerting you to shows as they come out in this off season. We'll have a little different schedule, but we'll have some content coming out to you. So sign up for those forums, so you get the shows when they come out. And obviously, we're available on Facebook, Twitter, or hit us up on the site in the comment field, or email us directly. We look forward and certainly enjoy the interaction with you guys. But with all of that said, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.